Welcome to Burning the Ships podcast, and I'm your host, Jason Seward. And today I've got Peter Russell on the podcast, not the comedian Peter Russell. I've got the real estate entrepreneur Peter Russell out of North Carolina. Excited to, you know, I'd like a lot of my guests, the first time I ever have any interaction with them other than scheduling them on the podcast is often like once I hit record and we go. And I like that because it challenges me to, keep the conversation rolling. I don't know anything about them. I get to learn things in real time. Some guests, I know everything about them, so I'm just asking them questions that will help them articulate who they are and what they have going on to you guys, the listeners. But in this case, knew nothing about Peter, didn't know anything about his business or anything. We were just connected by a mutual network connection that we have, and that led me to being curious about what he had going on and brought him on here. Before we get into all that, I will give y'all JJ's joke of the week, and this one's pretty good. Why can't your nose be 12 inches long? Because then it would be a foot. And that's JJ's joke of the week. I like that one. So about Peter Russell, he is, like I said earlier, he's in the real estate space. He built and scaled a really good size wholesale company, which wholesaling, y'all have heard me cover that several times on this podcast, but it's basically getting a property under contract, and then you essentially sell that contract to an end buyer, somebody that's going to flip that house or buy it as a rental or something like that, and then the wholesaler makes an assignment fee for assigning that contract to them. So he scaled a pretty robust business with that, but then, you know, as he got going in that space, he'll elaborate about it more, but he ended up kind of shifting gears and moving into lending, and not just lending like we do it at 608B Capital, but he's in a very, very specific niche within the real estate industry, and that is double close kind of transactional funding and lending. He'll go into all that, so I'm not going to bore y'all on the front end of this with all the details. I'll let him explain, but he's just another example of, you know, he's got his own journey where he has kind of escaped the corporate world, and he's an entrepreneur. He's building his own thing and doing so successfully. And he'll talk through all that, the mindset behind it and all the things that are involved. So I look forward to introducing you guys, or I am introducing you guys, to Peter Russell, and we will turn it over to that conversation now. Peter Russell, welcome to Burning the Ships, my man.
Thanks, Jason. Great to be here.
Yeah, man, I'm excited about this. We talked a little bit before recording. Some of my favorite episodes are when I'm getting to know the guest along with my audience, right? So a lot of my guests I've met, you know, I've gotten to know over the years, so I kind of know their story, but I get to learn yours in real time, and these are always the most fun for me. So, you know, as folks just heard in the intro, you're a wholesaler and a transactional lender based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. But to get things started, Peter, I'm going to turn it over to you and just kind of dive into those two things and anything else you want to kind of introduce yourself, and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. Yep. Appreciate it.
Take it away.
All right. So, yeah, I've been in real estate, started out as a wholesaler 9 years ago, 2016 is when I started. It's crazy to think that's been that long, because it doesn't feel that long most of the time. Every once in a while it feels that. But just found out about it through somebody I knew just posting online on Facebook Live back then. Instagram and stuff wasn't quite as big, but Facebook, he was just posting about getting deals, not having to fix them up, and then just selling them off and making $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, and kept posting where it was enough, where it was like, okay, eventually something's going on here. Let me reach out to this guy. So that's how I found out about wholesaling, got into it that way, was introduced directly from him, and then went to some local meetups here in Charlotte, talked to some people about it, and then just kind of failed forward with it. Didn't know exactly what to do or how to do it, but everyone just said, hey, it doesn't matter what you do for marketing as long as you stay consistent, as long as you're willing to talk to people, pick up the phone, try to solve their problem, you know, that sort of thing. Approach it that way, where there's plenty of people that need help out there. And you're going to talk to a lot of people, and you're not going to be the best fit for all of them, but just try to be a good listener, problem solver, and deals will work out. So it's probably 4 to 6 months before I got one to stick and work out. Had some heartbreak early on with deals that just didn't, for one reason or the other, work out, or people just kind of disappeared a couple of days before closing or whatnot. But those are tough at the time, but they're good to get out of the way, because then you know if you stay persistent, you get a deal closed after that, you realize that not all of them are going to work out, and that's okay. So I'd say 4 to 6 months for the first deal, and then after that, you know, it still took time and didn't happen overnight. And I know some people have stories where they're like, oh, within a month I got like a $75,000 deal or something like that. Those are great to hear, but definitely didn't happen for me. I had a business partner that I started out with at the time. We just get up in the morning and put out bandit signs and put sticky notes on doors that look like they're abandoned. Again, not really knowing who's going to walk by and call us off those notes and whatnot. But we got the phones to ring and got excited and got some contracts, and then eventually got some deals, and then eventually left that 9-to-5 job and started doing it full time. Probably about 7 or 8 months in, had some money saved up, consistent marketing at that point, doing some mailers, some text messaging, that sort of thing. So really started going, and then from there just built it out. It seemed like every 6 months we had add a new team member. If it was an acquisition person, if it was a transaction coordinator, got a little office space, three of us crammed into a room for a while, and then expanded on top of that and whatever. And grew and went into some different markets. Got some really good coaching, went to some really good events along the way. Spent the money. That was one thing that everyone told me to do, is like, hey, don't try to reinvent the wheel, right? Like, people have come before you. They've done it. They've done it well. They're where you want to be. Spend a little time, spend some money, and learn from them. Besides, you know, making your own mistakes is fine and learning from that, but learning from other people's can put you, you know, light years ahead pretty quickly. Yep. So just went that route and just really ran with it. Just kind of went all in. I again, when I first heard about it, I was like, I don't know, but the guy kept posting. So I was like, let me talk to him. And he got me excited and everything. So we did that. And then once you get those first few deals to work out and you're like, okay, this is legit. This happens. This works. I'm helping people out. I'm being compensated and paid for that. There's people that need to sell. There's people that are looking for their next flip. I'm just kind of that middle guy making things happen. I don't have a issue with communicating, talking to people, even awkward, you know, money is an awkward thing for a lot of people to talk about, especially when they're in a tough situation. But being a good listener and helping them out with that just kind of came naturally. And I think that worked out really well. So that's where I got started with everything, is wholesaling. I still wholesale to this day. I have a much smaller team now, business partners, and I went different ways to follow different things. But I still do it here in Charlotte. And I actually still go out time to time on appointments and meet with homeowners and sellers. Still like that part of the business a lot. Building those relationships and working with people still gets me going. Yep. And then that transferred.
Before we get into the lending, I wrote down like 5 questions I want to ask. Let's go backwards a little bit. One thing that led to your initial action was seeing someone post pretty much every day on social media, right? So you were seeing these posts, it kind of triggered some curiosity. You kept seeing them, then you finally reached out. First question I want to ask, when this individual was making all these posts, were you liking or commenting or sharing any of these posts? And I'm going somewhere with this, but
I would probably not at first.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was just watching, maybe a like, but more so just like curious.
We're seeing it. Yep. So my point with that is a lot of folks are very uncomfortable posting what they're doing in real estate or business or anything on social media, because they might post it and only get 3 likes or a comment or something like that. But the reality is, hundreds, if not thousands of people over time are seeing what you're posting and they are interested in it. And like this individual that was posting, you weren't flooding him with a bunch of likes and sharing his content, but eventually that curiosity made you pick up the phone, schedule a coffee or lunch with him. You dug in, and then that kind of catapulted you into the same arena. So I want to just make a point there to folks that are listening that are kind of going through that, I don't know what the right term, like maybe imposter syndrome or something like that. They don't want to share what they're doing that much because they don't think people are interested. People are interested. And that, you know, you're a great example of that. And we see it a lot because we post a lot on social media, and I have people message me all the time that I didn't even know they were following our content,
yeah,
but they want more info. So I think that I just kind of want to key in on that. You mentioned leaving your 9-to-5. Were you in a sales career or what? Did you have sales experience prior to doing this?
I did. Yeah, that's okay. What I was doing. I was doing sales over the phone. Randomly for energy in different markets, different states, people can kind of pick their plans and what they want to spend on gas or electricity, that sort of thing. North Carolina, you can't do that. You get Duke Energy and that's it. Like, yeah, that's right. What you're going with, right?
Yeah.
So for better or for worse, but that's what I was doing. And I just thousands and thousands of reps of talking to people over the phone all day, every day.
Yeah.
And I think that really translated and helped me out with having conversations with people in real estate. You know, different conversations, same thing, be more of a listener, that sort of thing. You know, just really hear what's going on, repeat it back to them. People want to feel like they're being heard because they have a lot of people reaching out to them about their property. That's how you stand out. I've had so many people just say, hey, we're going to go with you because we felt like you really cared.
Yeah.
And you really listening to the situation and you reflect, well, you didn't just jump to a number right away, sort of thing.
No, and I think that's the reason I'm asking, because anybody that tells me that it took, that they consistently did something for 4 to 6 months, didn't get their first deal until, you know, 4 to 6 months in of continuous rejection and hurdles and stuff like that, for you to stick to it through all that to eventually start getting some momentum, you either have to naturally have a comfortability with rejection, or you did it in your career prior. Because a lot of people, man, and you see it in real estate, they throw in the towel after a few months of rejection or not having success. And the next phone call could have been the next one to get them going, you know? So like you mentioned, the $75,000 deal done in week one. Well, that happens, but that is not the norm, right? So it takes getting the reps in, getting kicked in the teeth, and doing it over and over until you get that momentum. And I think that's important for people that are looking to get into any type of space where you have to put out effort consistently for a long period of time to get the results coming in. It's important to know, like, this is not an overnight thing, right? And yeah, fortunately for you, you had experience with rejection, and you knew that every no gets you closer to the next yes. And, you know, I think that's important to key in on. So,
yeah, and it's still, I mean, being 100% transparent, it still happens, right?
Right.
Like, you go, like, a month ago, had a great month for the wholesaling side of things. I mean, there's almost, like, close to $200,000 a month. And it was like everything was clicking, everything was working, the deals. And those are deals stacked up from previous months and everything too, right? But we had a few that were actually, we got under contract and closed that month. They were just ready to go.
Right.
But then looking at the board, it's like, okay, we got a few more on there. Then what's next? So that cycle, you have the confidence, you have the experience, but it still comes back around. Now I'm like, okay, now we got to go get some more. We got to keep this thing going, right?
Yep.
And the only way you do that is just to stay persistent. And just have confidence in what you're doing, but it still comes back around. I mean, it's still, there's always highs, lows, and like, you know, could I be doing this better? I think with me now, it's just like, am I marketing the best way possible? Am I getting in front of people the best way possible? Cause I'm confident that if I do, I can make something work. I can help them out. I can get a deal closed. But yeah, I don't think it ever truly 100% goes away. But it's just like, it doesn't matter. Like, you have to stay with it. You have to stay consistent,
yeah,
right? You just, you know that if you put in the time, energy, and effort, it will work out. So,
So wholesaling is like the ultimate transactional business, right? You're only, you complete one, you close it today, you get your fee, you got to do a next one to keep the money coming in, right? So it's not something that you can set it and forget it. You got to, unless you build a team that, you know, you kind of oversee. So it sounds like you did that for a number of years successfully, but at some point you had to have like a mentality of, I need to build something else on top of this, which ultimately sounds like it led to transactional funding. So talk about the genesis of that, where it came from, what your mindset was, and ultimately where that landed.
Sure. Yeah, that just came out of experience of myself and my team at the time needing to double close. We'd done strictly assignments for probably 4 or 5 years. And then out of nowhere in certain markets, it was becoming a little bit more regulated for assignments. We were getting larger assignment fees where we had a few deals kind of not work out for us too well, or it was really on the buyer side. The buyer would see how much we were making.
Yeah.
And as much as they told us, I don't care, I hope you make, you know, $100,000 on this deal, it makes sense for me. We were getting pushback once they would see the closing statements a few days beforehand. And we had a couple buyers come back and try to say, hey, you're making $75,000, let's say. There's room on this one. I forgot that we're going to have to redo the roof. Like, let's do a $12,000 reduction or something like that. Some of them, we ended up working something out. We had a few back out on us. And then, so with that, and then we started selling to a couple larger buyers in certain markets too, if you want to call them like hedge funds or institutional buyers, and they made us double close. Part of their process is no assignments, you have to double close. So
yep.
It's kind of trial by fire, and we would scramble and say, hey, you know, we don't have $250,000 sitting around to buy this house, even if we're going to turn around and sell it on the same day. We've got money in marketing, we've got money in escrow, we've got money in other things. So we'd go to private money people locally here in Charlotte or the different markets we were in and say, hey, this is what we have going on. We need to buy it, turn around, sell it. We have a contract with a seller, have a contract with the buyer. But for one reason or the other, we can't do an assignment, or we're not comfortable doing an assignment. So we'd have to walk them through that, because a lot of people hear that. They've never heard of a double close before, right? Just like wholesaling, people are like, you can do what with a contract? Like, a double close is like another layer where they're like, okay, this just doesn't seem normal, right? It's not a normal transaction. So we were doing those, but it was really sloppy. So we were being charged probably 3 or 4%, sometimes a little bit more. And then when you're that middleman, that guy in the middle, the seller expects you to buy it. The end buyer expects you to be able to sell it to them. And when you're the guy in the middle, like, you want things to go as smooth as possible because you're trying to do both of these on the same day. So if your money person, if your lender is on top of things and they're not wiring it over on time, or they disappear, or I had guys out on the golf course, I'd call them and I'm like, hey, you're supposed to send that money over today. And they're like, oh, I still got another hour and a half here. And then I'll drive over to the bank. And you're like, I've got people breathing down my neck. Like,
yeah.
Just a bad process, right? So after a while, the wheel started spinning, and I was like, how many, like, I'm only one company, right? At that time, I had a team of about 10 people. So we're a decent size, but, you know, we weren't the biggest by far. I know there's really big wholesalers out there that do stuff in their markets and nationwide. So we're only one company that needs this a handful of times a month. And it's a terrible process for us. How many other wholesalers nationwide are going through the same thing? Maybe they do have a private money person that's like great on top of it, tech savvy, can send the wire, bam. But I think most of them, and I learned pretty quickly, a lot of hard money lenders, private money lenders, they just didn't do double closings. They wanted to put their money out and have it out for 6 to 8 months. They wanted to get their points up front. They wanted to do that. And that was their lane, and they stuck with it. In my head, I'm like, okay, well, this is pretty fast, quick, easy money. Why wouldn't you want to, you know, work that way? But they weren't open to it. So long story short, after a while, it's just like, I bet you I could put together a process that is super wholesaler investor friendly. It's the same thing every single time. That's another thing. Every time I went out to get the money, it was just people would make me jump through different hoops, right? Some people are more comfortable with one thing. Other people are like, I don't care, I trust you. And they'll send the money and you're like, okay.
Right.
So our thing was like, try to make it super simple. And then the fee, the rate that you charge, as a wholesaler, you want to make and keep as much as you can, because it's going to feed your marketing. It's going to feed you, your family. It's going to feed your team. Like, you take that money, you can make a big spread, but there's a lot of overhead involved too that a lot of people don't see. So I'm like, if I can make a super simple process, and if I can make it super simple to the point and make it profit based for that wholesaler, where it's a very reasonable fee, and put that out there, how well would it do? So I put together, like, just fill out this form, submit it over, myself and my team will handle it, and we'll charge you less than 1%. So I started doing that locally here in Charlotte with some other wholesalers I knew, just to test it out. And they loved it. Like, they ate it up. They're like, this is straightforward. This is super simple. Appreciate it. Like, other people we were working with, it was tough. And then, so I was like, okay, that's cool. And I did that for probably like 6 months. And then after a while, I was like, I could probably do this at least in the Southeast, right? Like, this is all transactional. I don't have to go out to a property. I don't have to underwrite everything. If you have a contract with the seller, if you have a contract with the buyer, if the deal gets to closing, then I can fund it. So that's the underwriting, right? I don't care how many deals you've done. I don't care what your credit score is. I don't care, you know, I hope you're making as much as possible on it. My fee of less than 1% is just based off the amount of money that you need to fund that first deal with you and the seller. So I just put that together and I just kind of ran with it. And then at the beginning of last year, started paid to do Google ads, some Facebook stuff. Like you were talking about earlier, I just started talking about it on Instagram. I have less than 1,000 followers. Same thing. I was like, we'll see where this goes, right? I actually even hired a company that I still use where I just record stuff and I send it all over to them because I'm bad at it. I'm terrible. Right. I'm like, I don't know. And he's like, just talk about the same thing over and over and over again. And I'm like, everyone's going to get bored with this stuff. And he's like, no, they're not. Plus, he said something really cool to me. He's like, just when you listen, if you go pay to go see a show of your favorite band or whatever, or when you listen to them, you want them to play their hits, right? Their greatest hits. That's what people go. That's what they're comfortable with. That's what, like, gets embedded, and that's what gets associated with them. So he's like, you're just going to play your greatest hits over and over and over again.
Great advice. Yep.
Yeah. And that's always stuck with me because I'm terrible at recording. Doing podcasts is great because you can pull content from that. But whatever I record, I just send it over to them. They chop it up. They make it look much better. But I just start putting it out there. And it's crazy how many people would hit me up and they're like, oh, I didn't know that you did that. Or they're like, hey, tell me what is double closing exactly, right? And I found out a lot of people, even they've been in the game as long as I have, if not longer, they've heard about it, but they're not really sure what it is, or they did one 4 or 5 years ago and they kind of forget the process. So a huge part of it is just the education piece and, like, hey, this is what I offer. I'm trying to make it super simple from the wholesaler side of things. But also a lot of people are like, that's cool, but tell me a little bit more. And the only reason they knew that I was doing it or got intrigued is because I started posting stuff.
Yep.
You're talking about, put it out there. No, like, you know, I don't have like, oh, 50,000 people saw that, you know, YouTube video or anything like that. Or I'll get a few likes here or there or comments or people, whatever. But then I'll get calls out of the blue a month or so later where someone's like, hey, I saw you on that podcast or I saw you post that. I really need you to fund this. I have a deal in Tennessee. Can you do that? And I'm like, I never would have connected with that person.
Right.
Unless I put myself out there. So that's the genesis, that's the background of it, is just with double closing, it was something that I had to do being a wholesaler. And it now more and more there's regulation in different markets where you can't do assignments anymore. They're really cracking down on wholesalers, that sort of thing. Or some states you have to become a licensed agent.
Yep.
And nobody wants to go through that because they're like, I'm never gonna do the traditional route. Or in other states, you have to get an LLC for after every like 2 or 3 wholesale deals you do. So you'd have to go through the process and paperwork and time and money on that. So one way to be able to just kind of avoid all that is to be able to double close,
yep.
Right? And if you're going to do it and it's not going to charge you or cost you an arm and a leg. And then once you see how simple the process is, like I have people that come back to me now and every single deal they do, if they're making $20,000 or more, they're double closing because they just like to be able to like control the process, protect their profit. Nobody's seeing their assignment fee. Nobody's backing out on them, that sort of thing. Every single deal they do, they submit a request and we fund it for them.
Got it. So, all right. So let's dig into the mechanics of it all, if you don't mind, because a lot of folks listening are very familiar with the wholesaling world. So you find a property, you put that property under contract. The seller of that property assumes you're either buying it or assigning it. Assigning it means that you're just marketing that property or that contract to an end buyer. Let's say you get it under contract for $100,000. You may sell that contract for an assignment fee of $20,000 and the end buyer buys it for $120,000. So that's a standard wholesale deal. As a wholesaler, you never actually take deed of the property. So double closing is that, except one extra step. So do you want to kind of like mechanically walk through how that looks from how long you own it and all that stuff so that the listener that may not be familiar with, again, the details of it, so they have a better understanding?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, like you said, you have a contract with your seller. Let's say you have an under contract for $100,000, and then you have an in buyer that's going to buy it off of you. That's usually a flipper that's going to buy it, put a bunch of money into it, and put it back on the market. Let's say you have a great deal where you're going to sell it to them for $160,000. So you have that $60,000 delta. That's your profit. In a traditional wholesaling deal, you have it under contract for $100,000. You assign that contract over to the buyer for $160,000, and your assignment fee is $60,000. So with double closing, again, you're going to do that for one of a few different reasons. In this case, it's probably you're like, man, I'm making over $50,000 on this deal. If anyone sees that, even though I prepped the seller and told them it's going to be myself or some business partners that are going to be purchasing it, or you can even tell them, hey, you know, I'm not going to be the buyer on this, but I have a great network of people that I know will buy this. If you want me to get it under contract and I can, it's assignable, you can be as transparent as you want to be. That seller, once they go to the closing table, if you're doing an assignment, a lot of times if they look down there and they're like, oh, Pete Russell's company is making $60,000 off this thing, there could be an issue, even though they agreed, they were fine with it, whatnot. What I tend to see a lot more is even that buyer side, like we were talking about before, that buyer, they're going to see on the assignment. And a lot of times when you assign it over to them, they're going to ask for your original contract with the seller because they just want to see what all is on the contract, everything's fine, because you assigned it over to them, now they're in control of it. So with that, they're going to see that original price. Sometimes you can mark it out. Sometimes they push. They're like, I'm going to see what you have it on our contract for. So that can happen early on when you assign it over to them. And if they see $50,000, $60,000, as much as they say, like, there's no issue, there's no problem. I've had it happen. A lot of other wholesalers I know have had it happen where all of a sudden out of nowhere, they come back and they're like, well, it needs more work than I thought, right? It's a little bit more involved, or they can be bold enough to just be like, hey, you're making 60 on this. After I buy it and flip it, I'm probably only going to make 30 or 40. I'm no longer going to pay you $160,000. Like, we're going to work on this together. So double closing, instead of assigning that over to them, you have a contract directly with your seller for $100,000. You have a contract directly with your end buyer for $160,000. None of them ever see the in-between, the profit that you make. And on the day of closing, you're literally going to buy with our capital. We send it over to the title company or the closing attorney, the $100,000 that you need, and it will close out that deal between you and the seller. And then you'll turn around and sell it to that end buyer on the same day. Typically, it happens within a matter of hours.
Yeah.
It's really quick, especially now you can record everything digitally and you don't have to go down to the actual courthouse, all that stuff. So you, as the wholesaler, you are protecting your profit, that $60,000, by being able to buy it and turn around and sell it on the same day instead of assigning it over and just holding your breath and hoping that no one has an issue with you making $60,000.
Right. So in that scenario, I know the answer to this, but I want to hear it from you. What is the risk and how do you mitigate the risk of you close on it, you do the first of the double close, and then something happens where that end buyer falls out and now you own this $100,000 property with no plan B? Do you go into it with a plan B and C, or is it pretty buttoned up where that money is not coming in to close the first close until it is 100% going to close the second close. Does that make sense?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's the latter. So our process is you submit your request once you have contract with the seller and a buyer. On average, the wholesaler is submitting that request for the double closing 10 days before the day of closing. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's sooner. We get people that hit us up and they're like, hey, are other money people backed out last minute? And we're like, okay, we'll scramble and fund it that day. But on average, they give us a little heads up. So once we get the request, our biggest thing is to put us in contact, you, the wholesaler, put us in contact with who's ever closing the deal. Again, if it's in a, it's either going to be a title company or a closing attorney, depending on what state, because we communicate mostly with that closing company because they control really everything. They'll let us know if we still need more paperwork from so-and-so, or oh, it's getting pushed back a few days, or hey, there's something wrong with title. We'll keep you posted. So we're communicating directly with them so we don't bother the wholesaler. We don't have to play like telephone or whatever with everybody. So as we get to that day of closing, on the day of closing, the thing that we have to have is everyone for the first contract between the seller and the wholesaler has to sign everything. And then on that second one between the wholesaler and the in buyer, everyone has to sign. And then the biggest piece to it is that in buyer, if they're using cash, hard money, private money, their funds have to be in escrow. So they have to be fully committed. It's not like, hey man, let's close this out and hope that it works out, or
yep,
I'm at the airport, but I'll be back in a week. Just buy it, and well, you know, I'm good to go. I've done tons of deals with this person. You know, we protect ourselves by making sure that those funds are in escrow and everybody's signed. And at that point, we'll wire over for the first transaction, and we let that closing company know like this has to happen back to back. And we've done over 300 of them in the last 18 months, and haven't had an issue. They get pushed back all the time. I mean, it's a real estate transaction. I'd say 75% of them don't close on the day that they're supposed to. Us being wholesalers and closing over 600 deals in the last 9 years, like, we know stuff happens, right? Yeah. Things get pushed, whatever happens. But that's our process, is everybody has to sign, and then the in buyer's funds have to be in escrow on the day of closing, just to know that they're committed and okay, like ready to go.
Yep. All that makes sense. What are the typical, I know it probably varies depending on different variables, but what are your typical terms? You said you've simplified this for wholesalers so that it is a smooth, easy math transaction. So what I'm a wholesaler. I want to double close this $100,000 property. What I come to you, what are the terms you're going to offer in general?
So our terms, for the majority, probably 95% of what we fund is less than 1%. Our average deal size that we fund right now is at $245,000. Obviously, we do really small ones. We did one 2 weeks ago that was like $15,000. Is a small piece of land that somebody was buying and selling. I think they made like $30,000 on it. It was a good little deal for them. And we funded deals that are in the millions. So we funded a $2.3 million deal. Somebody had an RV park in Arkansas where they bought it, turned around and sold it to somebody on the same day. Average size though right now is $245,000 in less than 1%. So we charge 0.75 on that. And then we have an admin fee on every deal. It just covers wiring costs, that sort of thing. It's $250. Mm-hmm. And then we do have a minimum. If you're getting in that range of like $100,000 and less, we just simplify it and say, hey, you know, it can be a $10,000 deal, an $80,000, a $90,000 deal. We'll fund it, but we have a flat fee of $1,000 for that.
Yep.
So, and if it gets up higher, once it gets over $500,000, between $500,000 and a million, then we bump it up to 1 point.
Okay. Yep.
So majority of our stuff is 0.75 though. It's less than 1%.
Okay. So wholesaler, he's the first buyer. You're going to fund, and only reason I'm using 100,000 just for simple math, people listening, but you're going to fund 100,000. Let's just call it a point. So that's going to cost $1,000 to have that money for essentially a day or two before it does the second close. But there's going to be some closing costs involved. Are you guys funding those, or are you expecting your borrower to fund those closing costs?
We fund it. So whatever you need cash to close that A to B deal,
yep,
like you said, like if you have an under contract for $100,000, you're probably in your contract saying that I'll pay your seller closing costs to that seller. So that first transaction may bump up to $102,000.
Got it.
Let's say, but we fund that full amount. So whatever you need cash to close on the AB deal, is the amount that we fund. So you don't have to bring anything to the table. You don't have to put like 10 or 20% of your own money in. And then when the second deal closes, if you're selling to somebody for 160, like we said off the, example, then we get our 102,000 back when that second deal closes along with our fee. That's another question, is like, how do I pay the fee, or do we have to pay that up front? It's like, we'll fund the entire first side and we get our money back in our fee on the second side. And then what's ever left over is obviously your profit as the wholesaler.
Okay.
And then that's being wired. So it all gets handled by the closing company.
Okay.
Who's getting wired, who's getting paid, you know, that sort of thing.
Got it. And then, so those being your general terms, is there like a 1 to 3 days, if it closes in that time, it's this amount. But if it gets beyond or extends for whatever reason, that second close drags on, or the money sits in escrow a little bit longer than anticipated, is there like an extension for another point or something like that? Like, do y'all have any structure around that?
So the only way that we'll fund it is on that day of, once everybody's signed and the buyer's funds are in escrow. So 99% of the time, it's all going to happen same day. If for some reason everything lines up and then it just doesn't fund that day, it would just go into the next day. And as long as it all funds together, there's not an issue.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that, because a lot of double fund lenders, you know, that money is going to escrow before everything's buttoned up and signed. So that's a very safe strategy. And I guess because you're doing it that way, before you fund it, you're pretty much guaranteeing you're getting that money back in no more than 2 days, like day of or the next day, which allows, like, that velocity of money allows you to, because that 0.75%, that's a very competitive rate for this. So for anybody listening that has a need for this, or that, you know, is looking for this strategy, I encourage you to reach out to Peter, because that's a very competitive rate. So it sounds like you guys have a very buttoned up process, and you said y'all are lending nationwide. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. Anywhere and everywhere, all over. I'm trying to think. I don't think we've hit all 50 states yet. I don't think we funded a deal in Alaska or Hawaii yet.
Right.
But we've hit almost all the mainland, the lower 48, but we can, as long as the closing company is investor friendly. And that's another thing we bring to it as well. Every once in a while, someone's got a closing, and somebody chose to use a specific title company, and the title company may not do a lot of double closings, like, we'll hop on the phone with them and talk to them and just verify that they're good to go with everything. There's, out of the hundreds that we funded, there's only been two or three where we just said, hey, they're really not getting it, or they're not open to doing it, or they were saying, hey, we can close one and then we have to wait 3 or 4 days just to close the other one, or that sort of thing. And we just let all parties involved know, like, if you, like, we happy that you have a deal, but we won't be able to fund it this way. Are you open to going with another title company? And we can work with you on that. But most of the time, once we hop on the phone with that title company and walk them through it, they're like, okay, yeah, fine, that makes sense. So we bring that experience in handling tons and tons of wholesaling transactions for ourselves, to the table, where we can kind of like help out and walk them through it and see if they have any specific questions and whatnot. Most of the time they're pretty versed in it,
yeah.
But every once in a while, especially if it's a new wholesaler and whatnot, they don't know what to ask. They don't know really what to say. They know what they want to do. They don't know how to accomplish it. So we can help out with that as well.
Right. Got it. You mentioned something earlier, and I just kind of want to make a point on this, but, you know, unfortunately it is common. Over the years, we've bought several dozen deals from wholesalers, right? And we've bought from other sources off the MLS, but a good source of deals for us were wholesalers. And so I've never wholesaled myself, but I'm very familiar with it as buying from wholesalers. I never cared how much that wholesaler made. Like, because no matter what, the analogy I make, if I go buy a bottle of water from a grocery store, somebody's making profit off that. I don't care what that grocery store paid for that bottle of water. It has a certain value to me for me to pay what the price is on that. And that's all I care about. So, like, you know, to look and see that, like, I'm underwriting each deal as an end buyer the same way. I know what I want to make off of it. I know what my numbers are. And to negotiate that down just because I see somewhere that the person I'm buying it from is getting it much, you know, they're making more off of it than I'm going to make at the end. Like, that doesn't compute to me. And unfortunately, that is an issue when wholesaling, because a lot of end buyers do look at it that way. But I had a mentor of mine say one time, and we were talking about something else, but this rings true here. There's enough sunshine, like there's unlimited sunshine for everybody, right? And just because somebody else is doing well or maybe better than you on a particular deal that you're dealing with, like, celebrate that. Don't discourage that or not do business with that person. That person went out, did a very good job negotiating a really good deal. And if they can make a big profit off that, you're trying to do the same thing when you flip it on the end. So yeah. I just want to kind of get on my soapbox there. So
no, you're one of the good ones. You're one of the good ones. Like,
but fortunately for you, and my second point here is you saw a need there because you were wholesaling yourself and you saw this kind of opportunity. Well, if I double close some of these, I avoid that conflict, I guess. And you saw a need to be the one that provides this service. And I think that's important because that's kind of how we built our lending business. We were using hard money to flip these houses and do the BRRRR process and all that for so many years. We were kind of making a checklist of all the pain points we were dealing with hard money lenders. So we kind of, the next step for us was, okay, how can we create a lending product for other borrowers that are doing what we are doing that eliminates maybe not all, but most of these pain points and then offer that to the market? And that's exactly what you've done with this. It sounds like you're making it so streamlined, so simple, and so competitive on the price side that you eliminate the headaches that a lot of these wholesalers are dealing with trying to double close because you're actually doing this yourself. You know, you know what it feels like. So kind of speak to that in any way you want, but just the power of that, being able to provide a product that is also serving yourself, but serving people that are doing the same thing as you.
Yeah. I'm super glad you brought that up because that's the coolest part of it. Like, since I've been doing this for 9 going on 10 years, with wholesaling, I've learned a lot from a lot of other people. Some of it's free content on like YouTube when I first started out. Some of it's going to mastermind. Some of it's paying for one-on-one coaching. And I always felt like everybody had something to give back, but I didn't. I was super grateful. Like, wholesaling, real estate investing changed my life for the better and in a lot of different ways, not just monetary ways, but just like mindset and what's possible and to be able to break away from a 9-to-5. So I was always like, well, I'm not really like a data guy, right? Or I'm not really a coaching type person maybe, right? Or I didn't have anything where I felt like I kind of like gave back besides anybody and everybody that would ask me questions or people getting started or that sort of thing. I was always happy to talk to them. But I was always kind of looking for something where I'm like, what can I do to give back to this thing, specifically wholesaling within real estate, that's changed my life. So I was always on the looking for it kind of thing, but just head down in the business doing things. And that's what this has turned out to be, is finding something, finding the pain points, approaching it from a wholesaler myself, but then as wholesalers kind of nationwide, because I've met so many and I've you know, I still communicate and interact with wholesalers locally here and nationwide. I go to big meetups and everything like that. I've built a lot of really good relationships. So bouncing it off them and everything like that is a big pain point. Was just a bad process, and no one was really handling it nationwide. You'd have people locally that might fund a double close for you, right? So once I started picking that kind of apart and approaching it in that way, like, what's, if I were to call up a double closing company and use their services, how would I want it to be? How would other wholesalers want it to be? And why would I keep going back? And the two big things is to have a simplified process where it's the same thing every single time. There's nothing worse than like working with somebody where you're like, oh, this time we're doing a little different, or this time we're doing it this way. Or I know that's what we did for the last 6 months, but now it's different.
Right.
Sure. If you can improve it and make it a little bit better, maybe. Right. But with especially with this, where it's just like, I just need the funds. I need to move on to the next thing. I need to focus on other things. Will you provide it for me? And how do I request it? That's the same every single time, just filling out our form and it comes into our system. It's an easy process. And then the other thing is too, like you were saying, those to get these deals, to make these big chunks and these big profits, it's a lot of time, energy, and effort involved. So on my end, I was like, I want to be able to fund these. I want to be able to create a great process, simplify for people. But I also want them to really like reap the benefits of their hard work and labor, because I know what it's like to call thousands of people, to be rejected, to have deals back out, to have, you know, them end up selling it to someone else. But I also know what it's like to make a big deal, but it's not like you're just taking that all home and spending it on something crazy, right? Like you're going to have to spend another $20,000, $30,000 next month in marketing, or you have overhead, you have all this software, you have people that you pay. So a great process, but then also be able to fund their deal where they're like, man, that was like a very minimal fee and I still get to control and protect my profit and take that into my business and do stuff with it. So creating this, putting this together, having it work and being well received has been a really cool thing where I feel like I finally found my little piece, my niche to give back to something that's changed my life so much. So now I'm just like taking it and running with it, trying to perfect it, trying to get it out in front of as many people as possible. And like I said, a big piece of it too is educating people that it's out there, that it's available. It's a simple process. It's not crazy like, you know, other loans and things that people have to get. It's just, if you have a deal, you have a deal. And if it works out and closes, we'll fund it. Right. So to be able to put that together and put it back out there, has been really, really cool and super rewarding. I feel like I finally found that thing that I've been looking for. Again, I'm not going to be the data guy. Don't come to me for anything like that at all. But with this and my experience and being able to communicate and talk to the wholesaler or talk to the title company, make sure everything's handled well. And now it's, you know, there's been proof of concept. We've been doing it for 2 years now. Like I said, doing several hundred of them. And it's something that's just been really, really neat and well received. And I'm always open to input and feedback from anybody I work with as well too. That's other wholesalers along the way have given some pretty good feedback on things. So
right. So as you continue to scale, which I would imagine the intent is to grow this, right? You know, and it seems like demand is good. I mean, y'all have done, you said 300 in 18 months. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of volume. So as you continue to scale, obviously the next question is, I mean, you're not funding all these deals out of your hip pocket. You got investors and things like that, or potential opportunities for investors to come in. What does that look like for you, and what might it look like for the investors in the future as you open up opportunities for them to, you know, be a part of this, invest in it passively as you, you know, grow it?
Yeah. Yeah. It was all self-funded at first. And then I got to a place, which is a good place, but can be scary a little bit too, is just not having the capital. Mm-hmm. One thing I don't want to do is ever turn anybody down that needs the funding. So probably about 8 months ago, I worked with somebody on putting together some capital, working out a fund and putting terms and everything together. And then we had somebody come in and was just like, hey, I'll work with you guys directly. Like, I love your product. I'm familiar with wholesaling. I'm familiar with all of this. So that worked out pretty well. But even that capital that we raised is getting to a point now, it's getting pressure tested every once in a while. We're, again, good problem to have.
Yeah.
But we're going to probably have to go back and raise here pretty soon. So if anybody's ever invested in having that conversation and seeing what that looks like, again, super straightforward process. The money's not out for months at a time. It's not speculative to the market or anything like that. It's a different offer and a different product. But the volume is there and it continues to increase. So we will need to go back pretty soon. I would think within the next 2 to 3 months, start to go out there and put some feelers out and then eventually do another raise.
Got it. So you talk about like that pressure point or the pressure test of, I mean, obviously as a lender, the best problem to have is your demand exceeding your capital. That's a good part. Like you don't want to turn anybody down, but you are most profitable when all your money's out to work, right? And is there ever a point where, you know, maybe the opportunities to fund exceed the capital? And I know you're trying to get ahead of that by raising more money eventually, but in those situations, have you reached a point, I guess, where you've had to turn away folks or broker deals or send to others who are lending in your same space?
For a few larger deals, we have some backup capital that helped us out with those larger ones, like the $2 million one.
Yes.
So once we get over a million in request, and that could be multiple requests in the same day, or it could just be a larger deal, we do have some backup capital that we can call on for that. So that's super helpful.
Yeah.
The goal is to obviously eventually have enough built up where it's not having to go into that and rely on that if not at all possible. But I think it's going to be a thing as it grows nationwide more and more. I think every 4 to 6 months, probably go back in there and maybe raise a little bit more. So,
yeah, we battle this every day in our business because we are a debt fund. 100% of our capital that is being lent outside. Now, we do some private lending outside of our fund, you know, with our own capital. But within the fund, you know, 1 week we're pulling the lever, we got to go raise some more capital because we have all these deals to fund. And then the next week we got a bunch of loans paying off and investor capital coming in. We got to market hard to find deals. And it always works out, but it's that constant seesaw of, you know, we're raising money this week, we're trying to find loans next week, and I don't like, that's just the nature of this business. I don't expect that to ever end. But us as operators, we have to be aware of that and always kind of mapping it out 3, 4, 5 weeks ahead, knowing what's coming in, what's going out. So. Interesting. So we'll start wrapping things up here, Peter. And you've done a great job articulating what it is you do. I think a lot of people are going to be interested in learning more. So before we wrap up, what's the best way for people to find out more about you or reach out, connect? Give us that if you don't mind.
Yeah. I mean, I think easiest way is just call me, text me. I can have my number, give it out. I give out my personal cell phone. A lot of times people call and they're like, how are you associated with the business? So I'm like, well, I'm the founder, owner, CEO, whatever you want to call it. Like, I still growing and at a place where I don't mind explaining everything or walking people through it or that sort of thing. Right. So I think just calling me directly. I'm pretty active on Instagram, working on getting better and better at that as well. But if people want to direct message me there on Facebook, I have a lot of people reach out. But yeah, call, text is probably the easiest. I check the other stuff, the social stuff, a few times throughout the day, but sometimes I get really, really busy.
Yep.
So if somebody's like, hey, I have a deal, or I have something coming up, or I really have a question, that sort of thing, I say just shoot me a text and then we can hop on a call.
Okay. Yeah. And we'll link all your social media and we'll put your email and phone number in the show notes so folks can reach out to you. And, you know, life is not always all about business, right? So if you're doing all this work and just grinding all the time with, you know, you don't get to enjoy the fruits of your labor, what are you doing it for? So I'm curious, what do you do all this for? What does Peter like to do when he's not wholesaling or double closing and all that? And I know you mentioned travel. So like that and some other things, what are some things that you're into to kind of decompress and enjoy all the work, you know, the fruits of all the labor you're putting in?
Sure. Yeah. No, I have a pretty simple mission statement. It's provide value. And the other one is have fun. So sometimes you can do both those at the same time. And that's when it's really, really cool. But I love to travel. Any excuse I can make to go somewhere, whether it's, you know, I live 2 hours from Asheville, go up to the mountains for like a long weekend. I live about 3.5 hours from the beach here in North Carolina. So we do a lot of weekend beach trips, but then anything in between, just if anyone says, hey, we're kind of planning something to go somewhere and I got some time to do it, like I'm going to check it out at least once. We just got back from, Pacific Northwest, went up to Seattle, never been up there before. We got lucky. The weather was awesome. It was like 60s and 70s. So you feel like you could walk all day. Like in the South, it's already like 85 degrees and humid. So We did some hiking up in Olympic Mountain National Forest. We went out to the coastline, which is like 3.5 hours away. So rented a car, did some stuff. So just got out, explored, was pretty good about not being on my phone too much, but still having some stuff I had to take care of and whatnot. But travel, fresh perspective on everything, gets you away from stuff a little bit. And I love what I do. I work mainly from home. I spend a lot of time in coffee shops. So when I get back, like, I'm excited to get back. I haven't had the Sunday scaries in 8-9 years now, which is a great thing, right? But it does, every once in a while, as much as I love this, to break up the monotony, to get outside of it, just to go on a trip. I've got like 3 or 4 more scheduled coming up. In 2 weeks from now, I'm going to Collective Genius down in, I think it's Bradenton or Sarasota, Florida. And I set it up. I was like, oh, it's really nice. It's really pretty over there. They have nice beaches. So we're going to go like 2 days beforehand and enjoy that, right? Get some sun and everything like that, and then do the event. And then actually coming back and doing a family trip on the beach that week. So it's going to be a beach week, different sides of the coast kind of thing. So I just love to travel, get out, explore, and a little bit of a foodie. Anywhere I go, it's like, hey, let's look up restaurants. And if I spend a decent amount of money on stuff, it's travel and food.
Dude, I mean, you're nailing my heart. It's like you've been a fly on my wall. So you talk about masterminds and groups and stuff like that. And we're in a handful of them. And I say we, my business partner and I, but we strategically like pick our groups and stuff like that based off the locations of their next event. Right. So probably the biggest group I'm in is Legacy Family with Tim Bratz. I don't know if you're familiar with him, but they do phenomenal. 3 times a year, they're going to great locations. I wasn't able to go on this one, but the last one was in Hawaii. In June, I'm going to this one, but is in Napa Valley. So we're always going to an interesting place, but I use them as a lot of times trips for my wife and I, or we've brought the kids on, you know, if it's at a beach location or something like that. Travel is a big piece of it. But if you can combine the two, I'm going to a real estate event, I'm networking, I can turn that into a write-off all day long, you know?
Right.
So
Meals out. Yeah. You're talking real estate. Yep. I can send you, if you've never been out to Napa and Sonoma, I can send you some good places. I've been out there a few times.
Please do. Yeah. I'm going, it's still up in the air if my wife's going to be able to go, but I'm planning on going a couple of days before the event to experience some stuff. I'm a big golfer, so I'm going to try to play some golf out there and whatnot. Nice. So,
yeah.
But yeah, man, it's the one thing about this real estate world, it's really opened my eyes the last few years since I left my corporate career and really dug in all into it. But there's just so much opportunity, so many people out there to meet. And I get excited about that. I love, like you, this is the first conversation you and I have ever had. We connected through a mutual friend and exchanged a few emails. And this is the first time I'm getting to know you. And we share a lot in common when it comes to the travel and the food and all that. And I love what you're doing in your business, man. The idea of, so I'm in the lending space, obviously, as well, but a lot of people that are in this space, and I'm not saying this is a bad thing, but they create a business, around something that maybe they didn't cut their teeth on doing themselves. Right.
Yeah.
So like I've flipped a ton of houses and I've borrowed a lot of hard money. And I still do. Now it's borrowing it from my own fund. But, right, you know, I know the ins and outs of it. You know the ins and outs of wholesaling and what it takes to double close. And it's not that hard to do it if you can eliminate a lot of these pain points that a lot of wholesalers are going through. So I love that you're solving and providing value to those people. And I appreciate you. You've done a fantastic job articulating that. So I appreciate it. So
no, thanks, Ed. Thanks for having me on. And yeah, I mean, that the whole thing is you have to make money to be able to do things, purchase things, whatever,
yep,
right? But it's the freedom that almost everybody looks to attain when they do this. And it doesn't mean that you're not going to work. I mean, I work harder now than I ever did with a 9-to-5, but I enjoy it. I get to see, you know, something that starts up in my mind, get put down and executed and turn into something that other people can use and profit from, and it helps them is just amazing. But yeah, you want to be able to, my whole thing is freedom. And especially I think within the last few years, we all realized how much we can hop on Zooms and do stuff. We don't have to meet in person as much. It is great to meet in person from time to time and stronger connections that way. But the monetary stuff's been really cool. Again, it's changed my life and I can help out family and you know, don't have to worry about certain things like I used to. But the freedom to be able to, like last week, like I said, go on a trip during the middle of the week and yep. be able to explore stuff in a national park when it's quiet because it's not the weekend and everybody's right. there, right? That kind of stuff. That is like the most important thing and the best part of this. Yeah, it's been cool to connect. It is like we just a couple of text emails, but then if we run into each other at an event or anything like that, we'll have the yep. the connection of being on this. But yeah, it's the double closing thing has been great. I think we're just tip of the iceberg with what we're doing with it as it grows, as we get in front of bigger audiences and groups and just get the word out there. We're just trying to stay persistent as possible. You know, there's a lot of wholesalers that we can work with and help. And that's the biggest thing right now is just letting them know that we have it available. And I'm super confident that once we work with them, like they're just, you know, not going to be looking around for anybody else. They're like, this guy's got it. He's a wholesaler too. He's got it mapped out. Super easy to work with. We'll go above and beyond and then just capture them and just be their go-to moving forward. And even with all the money that we put into marketing and Google ads now and different things like that, word of mouth and referrals are still the biggest thing for us. People do business with people that they like or somebody that they likes.
Yep.
So that whole thing of like, I know this guy, he's great, you're gonna love him. And if that comes from somebody that you trust, I mean, referrals are still really, really big for us.
Right.
So just be putting the word out there, working with as many people as possible and letting them know what we have is just kind of where we're at right now. And as it continues to grow, it's just really fun and really exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, look, I again appreciate you coming on, appreciate you connecting, and I look forward to keeping in touch with you, following your and there's going to be, obviously, I mean, folks will hear this and be more interested and they'll reach out, but I mean, in our space, we can double close lend on that, but our demand for our main product is pretty high right now. So, you know, if we have folks up here in Virginia or, you know, we have a pretty good market down in North Carolina, but anybody looking for what you're offering, we'll send them your way. And yeah, man, I appreciate you coming on and sharing your story and what you offer. And I think it'll provide a lot of value. So thank you for joining us on Burning the Ships and we'll be in touch soon.
Thanks, Jason. I appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Burning the Ships. I want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, 608B Capital, helping real estate investors secure fast, reliable funding to fuel their boldest moves. If you're ready to take your investing to the next level, visit 608bcapital.com to learn more. If you found value in today's episode, please take a moment to rate and review the podcast. Your feedback not only helps us improve, but it also helps us reach more people who are ready to burn the ships and commit fully to their goals. And don't forget to share the episode with someone who needs that extra push to take bold action. I'll leave you with this. Burning the ships isn't just about removing the option to retreat. It's about unlocking the courage to charge forward. No matter the odds, the past is behind you and the future is yours to conquer. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time on Burning the Ships.